Welcome to Private Equity Perspectives, a podcast by BDO USA's private equity practice. Each episode, BDO connects with leaders in the private equity space to discuss the latest trends driving deal activity, fund strategies, and portfolio company optimization.
Hello, and welcome to BDO's Private Equity Perspectives podcast, where we explore the trends impacting private equity today. I'm Todd Kinney, your host and National Relationship Director in BDO's private equity practice. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by two great BDO clients, Avik Das, partner at Three Hills Capital Partners, and Blair Greenberg, partner at Regal Sagemount. Avik and Blair will shed some light on their respective firms' expertise and the roles they play in the middle market, how they create value and their proven track records, and the unexpected positive impacts that macroeconomic volatility has presented for both of their companies. In part two of this episode, which will come out in a couple of weeks, we'll go a bit deeper with Avik and Blair to get their take on technology investments, sectors they've been monitoring, really what gets them excited about working with a new company. And of course, as we always do, we'll close with their predictions for the rest of the year. So just a reminder to our listeners that the remarks and opinions of our guests do not necessarily represent BDO's views. So with that out of the way, Avik, why don't you kick us off as a partner at Three Hills Capital Partners? Perhaps you can introduce yourself, explain your role at the firm, as well as your firm's approach to providing flexible capital solutions in the middle market.
Sure, Todd. Thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to be here and obviously an honor to be joined by Blair from Regal as well. So as mentioned, my name is Avik Das. I'm a partner at Three Hills and I head up the New York office for Three Hills, which is a more recent effort because Three Hills is a European firm. We're headquartered in London, have offices across Europe. Besides London, we have an office in Milan, in Luxembourg. We have people on the ground in Paris and in Madrid. But we really opened the New York office around about 3 years ago to do three things. One is to support our European portfolio companies with their growth ambitions in North America. Number two, we can invest in North America headquartered businesses across our funds. Between 20 to 50% of our portfolio or capital can invest in North America headquartered businesses. And then the third element is that we have a number of our LPs that are either based in the US or in Canada, and we wanted to be closer to them. And so what we do with Three Hills in a nutshell, today we manage about $3 billion in assets under management across three principal strategies, with the main strategy being the one that we established back in 2012 and continue to deploy today and is our primary focus, if you will, which is, as you mentioned, to back companies with what we call flexible capital solutions. Now, our focus, first and foremost, is almost exclusively to back founder-owner-managed businesses. Really, founders, owners that run their own businesses, need capital for the next stage of growth, are looking for a financial partner to support them with that next stage of growth, be it M&A, buy and build, establishing a new business line, entering a new market, establishing a new JV, and need a financial partner to support that. So our slogan, if you look at our website, is financing growth, and that is what we're all about. Sometimes that comes in combination with some form of shareholder replacement, either cleaning up old alphabet rounds or sometimes in the form of succession planning, such as a son buying out his father's shares or a daughter buying out her mother's shares. Today, we're investing out of a $1 billion fund, our Three Hills Capital Solutions Fund 4, where we're about halfway invested and have one portfolio company in the U.S., but a number of European portfolio companies with a sizable presence in the U.S. And then alongside that, we also have two other verticals at Three Hills. One is a $500 million credit fund, which is actually led by my partner, Lance, who's also based in the US, Lance Contento. And then finally, we have a sustainability-focused lower middle market fund that is a 300 million euro fund that looks at businesses that are slightly smaller in size. So EBITDA is between 3 to 10 million. Out of our principal capital solutions fund, we're looking at businesses of between 15 to 20 million of EBITDA and upwards. And to conclude, really, in terms of sectors that we look at, we focus on business services and tech-enabled business services. We call ourselves more situational experts rather than industry experts, but a key theme for us is to support business services, professional services, tech-enabled business services. We also spend a decent amount of time in R&D, R&D-led manufacturing and niche manufacturing businesses. And finally, across our funds, we invest about 15% in hospitality, high-end hospitality, luxury hospitality, and I'll come to talk about that when we continue with other questions that I'm sure you'll have, Tom.
I'll have a few for you. Well, I appreciate you joining us, Avik. I know you're traveling through Europe right now and taking time out of your busy schedule. So it's good to have you and Three Hills on the podcast. So Blair, over to you. As a partner at Regal Sagemount, can you tell us about yourself, your role within the company, and perhaps how your firm approaches growth-focused private equity investments?
Sure. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate the invite and looking forward to today's discussion. In terms of intro, so I'm Blair Greenberg. I'm one of the partners here at Regal Sagemount. I've been investing in tech and tech-enabled services companies and financial services companies for close to 20 years now. Here at Sagemount, I would say I focus on a couple of different areas. So certainly financial services and insurance is one of my big focuses, but also broadly within the several vertical software sectors as well are areas of focus for me. In terms of the fund, we've been around for over a decade now. We're currently investing out of three different funds. We have a $2.7 billion equity fund we call our flagship fund that does minority and majority equity checks. We also have a $1 billion credit vehicle that invests in first lien, second lien, hold co-pick, and a wide range of other sort of special opportunities within the credit markets. And then we have a $500 million fund we call Basecamp that also does minority and majority equity investments. So in terms of flexibility, actually a lot of similarities between what Avik's doing and, you know, us here at Sagemount. In terms of, you know, growth equity, I would say our lens is really focused on businesses with kind of mid-teens or higher growth and generally focused on profitable companies. So, you know, we're not a venture capital firm or anything like that. We're really focused on true growth stage companies here at Sagemount. And from a sector perspective, I would say our aperture is fairly wide in terms of it being tech-enabled and financial services. But where I would say we're very focused is on finding what we deem to be recurring revenue businesses. So here at Sagemount, we really focus on finding companies where when we wake up on January 1st every year, we know that even if a portfolio company doesn't add a single new customer, that, you know, we're going to have 90, 95, or even over 100% of the revenue we had last year from those same customers that the company had in the prior year. So a very, very big focus on high quality, high retention businesses here at Sagemount.
All right, Blair. Well, I know you're a busy man as well, so we appreciate you carving out some time to join us. So both of your firms have developed unique approaches to creating value in the middle market. As we've said, Three Hills through flexible capital solutions and Regal Sagemount through growth-focused equity investment. So perhaps each of you can share a recent success story that demonstrates the impact of your respective approaches. And Avik, I'll let you kick us off on this topic.
I'll make sure to be short, but I'll share two success stories, if you don't mind, because I think they highlight a little bit of how we operate. And as I mentioned, so we're really trying to back founder, owner, managed businesses that want that second bite of the apple. And so often the buyers of their own businesses, yes, they want a financial partner, but they're really, you could call them equity greedy. And that's what we like. And that's, you know, where we create a strong alignment with the founders, owners that we back. And so typically we invest through a capital solution that is designed to be less dilutive, which means, as Blair was mentioning as well, there is a high degree of flexibility in terms of how we construct our deals. In most cases, we are in a minority situation, so we are really leaving the founder owner in the driver's seat. Now, having said that, clearly, in most cases, we are the first institutional capital provider to the businesses that we back. And so in that vein, we support these companies in that next stage of institutionalization, if you will. A lot of these companies are great at what they do, but the decision-making may be centered around one person or two people. They might not have the best financial reporting in place. They don't have a CFO. They might need our help when it comes to what we call digital readiness. So making sure that their systems are up to speed, that they have a cybersecurity, not just policy, but the systems in place to make sure that they're equipped for any cyber attacks, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a number of things that we try and bring to the table, not just through our investment team, but through what we call our value creation team. They're in-house. These are operators, operating partners that really go into the businesses and support them in areas such as HR, the digital aspects that I mentioned before, sustainability, for instance, but also regular way financial support, such as supporting them on an interim CFO basis. And so to answer your question from a success story perspective, I just give two success stories. One is a business that we backed back in 2020, an independent operator of restaurants, mostly high-end restaurants in and around New York, but also in Florida and other parts of the US. With our help, the company managed to reintegrate the old original site in Milan, Italy, which was not part of the business at the time when we invested in it. And so we really managed to support the founders to reintegrate that original site, which is owned by a family. They were keen to sell at some point. The original US business that we backed had only had the IP for the US. And so as part of that reintegration of the European side, we managed to bring together the European and international IP for the brand and can really now focus on the rollout, not just in the US, but also internationally. And so that's one of the more recent success stories. The other one that I'll mention, and that is just goes to some of the mundane tasks that we help with some of the European portfolio companies that move across the pond, if you will. So another business that we backed recently out of our Fund 4 is really a headhunting firm with a lot of innovative use of data. We would call it one of those tech-enabled business services or professional services firms that really helps with the recruitment, according to their slogan, from classroom to boardroom. So from junior recruitment all the way up to very senior level executive recruitments across a number of industries, clearly financial services, so a lot of private equity clients as well, but also in the areas of tax, legal, and other parts of the sort of professional services world. We just introduced them to a number of, you know, our partners, counterparts in the US, a number of advisors that we work with. And that's been a great success story. I basically built the US business from scratch and are now really sort of gaining market share. And so it's one of those sort of elements that goes toward some of the mundane tasks that we help with in the US when we support our portfolio companies. But that's just to share some perspective as to how far we can go in terms of supporting the portfolio.
Blair, same topic to you. Maybe you can share a recent success story that showcases the effectiveness of your approach. And additionally, I know you have significant board experience at various companies, so certainly feel free to highlight any of them and how those experiences have helped you inform your approach.
Sure. So as a fund, we have a group here at Sagemount we call Growth Factors that works with all of our portfolio companies around really growth acceleration. That is their primary focus. So it's not a group of cost cutters or anything like that. The goal is really, how do we wake up every day and help our companies grow faster? So we have about 40 people on a team called Growth Factors Associates that works with the portfolio companies on a couple of different areas. So one is sales acceleration, where they are working with the sales leaders on a really wide range of topics around hiring new sales associates, building new processes, figuring out what's working and what's not on the sales team in order to figure out where to deploy incremental capital to efficiently drive growth in a company. Another area is on pricing and packaging, where they will go in and figure out how to optimize the pricing structure and packaging structure of the portfolio companies. Third area of focus is on M&A, where they have a team there that can go out and source acquisitions, do the due diligence, negotiate the deals, and set them up for integration. We also have our own recruiting firm that has placed several hundred employees at our portfolio companies because we find that growing companies constantly need talent. And so having Growth Factors as a recruiting firm has been a big asset for the portfolio. And then the last area is really preparing for exit, which is really making sure that good systems and processes are in place so that when a prospective buyer comes in to look at the business, they can see a really well-run company with good metrics and good access to data. So that's kind of how we work with the company. And there really is no requirement, but all of our portfolio companies leverage access to Growth Factors in some way, shape, or form. In terms of an example where I think we added some particular value to the portfolio company, one stands out is it was actually two businesses that were separate when we made the investment. And as part of our investment, we merged those two businesses together to have a common ownership structure. And then over the course of a 3-year period, we worked to execute on both an organic and inorganic growth strategy, whereby we brought on new teams to build new insurance products for our customers. And so we did these team liftouts to build these new programs. And then we also acquired three businesses during our hold period and worked with them to integrate those businesses. So in the course of a three-year period with our growth factors team, with the deal team, we were able to really triple the size of that company. And then ultimately, when it came time to sell that company, they had the systems and processes in place to be ready to answer the really challenging due diligence questions that you always get in a sell side process. And so our growth factors team had worked with them on being prepared for that exit. So that was one where, you know, we really just rolled up our sleeves and worked with management on coming up with a cohesive strategy and executing on it over a three-year period.
Wow. Well, that's a great story. But I got to tell you, Blair, I know your firm, and I guess I didn't realize everything that growth factors is bringing to bear for all your companies. That's pretty awesome and a nice arrow in your quiver, I would imagine.
Yeah. And I think from our perspective, our view is that for a very long time in the private equity and growth equity market, you could invest in a growing asset, growing business, and kind of ride that wave. But that strategy is not a way to generate alpha for the next 20 years. And right. So we came to the decision that we needed to make a substantial investment in our growth factors team, again, to the point where it's now over 30 people that work with the portfolio companies.
Pretty impressive. Good investment. All right, guys. Well, I'm going to pivot for today's last question and discuss some broader trends. So the current market presents both challenges and opportunities for mid-market investing, as you guys both know. So how have factors like high interest rates and broader macroeconomic volatility affected both of your firm's approach to new opportunities? And Blair, I'll let you take this one first.
Sure. So in terms of the types of companies that we've invested in and we focus on, I don't think it fundamentally changes that picture all that much. As a fund, we really focus on investing in companies that are not highly tied to what's happening with interest rates or whether the S&P is up or down. And if you look at the portfolio, the types of businesses we're investing in are things like flood insurance, where if the S&P is up or down, you still need to have flood insurance on your home. We have a business in the portfolio, which, again, if the S&P is up or down, if you need a root canal, you're going to go to the dentist. And so those are the types of companies that we invest in. And I don't think that changes in any way, shape, or form, where I think this recent volatility is going to make its way through the portfolio is really enabling some of our portfolio companies to play offense, where there may be competitors that are overlevered, that have exposure to certain parts of the market that, you know, are too volatile. And so we think there will be an opportunity for our portfolio companies that have access to capital through SafeMount to really go play offense. And I think that is what our game plan is going to be for the foreseeable future.
Right. Makes sense. Well, Avik, how do you feel about what's been going on in the market lately? Impact of higher interest rates, economic instability. What kind of impact is that having on your approach to new opportunities?
So look, I'll say two things. One is, to use another example from our portfolio, I didn't want to talk about tariffs, but I think, you know, inevitably it is clearly a very current topic. And, you know, one of our portfolio companies in the US, again, is a producer and distributor of truffles and truffle-based products, truffle oil, truffle salt, et cetera. And clearly, a lot of the truffles come from Europe, notably from Italy, but from other parts of Europe as well. So the company is exposed to what the tariffs will bring, clearly, and we're still assessing the impact of that. But it's interesting, actually, the founder and CEO is not worried at all, because he thinks that as one of the market leaders, they will benefit from a number of smaller players disappearing, because they won't be able to deal with the administrative aspects of what tariffs entail, number one. And number two, you know, he was actually sharing some anecdotes that back in the 90s, when he started selling truffles door to door in New York, now the business, you know, has grown to a much larger B2B company, notably as selling to through the food service channel and some other B2B industrial partners, that, you know, at that time, the tariffs for luxury goods and truffles could be considered as a luxury food item were close to 100%. And so, you know, they already operated under a regime which was much less favorable than, say, what it is today. And clearly it will get less favorable going forward. But, you know, the strength of the competitive position, I think, helps. The other aspect that is clearly a positive is that this is a business that is now headquartered in the US and is very much a made in USA brand, with some of the truffles actually coming from Kentucky, believe it or not. So truffles don't just grow in Italy, they also grow in other parts of the world. The other aspect, and Blair mentioned the S&P, our flexible capital solution can really bridge the valuation gap. And that if there is a valuation mismatch, our capital solution can often be a solution, because a founder owner might have a number in mind that he or she needs to drive that next stage of growth, be it, as I mentioned, through M&A or establishing a new business line, et cetera. Yes, they will have a gap to a degree. And then the final thing is, in times of uncertainty, as Blair was mentioning as well, that opens up a number of opportunities. We've done quite a few take privates throughout the history of Three Hills. We've done 3 take privates. We took a business private from the London Stock Exchange in 2022, which is an independent operator of care homes in the UK and in the GCC. In 2023, we announced the take private of a company that supports SMEs with their digital transformation across Europe. So, you know, again, in times of volatility, there are a number of opportunities. Clearly, we need to safeguard our portfolio and make sure that our portfolio is equipped for the uncertain times. That is where some of the elements that we bring to the table come into play as well, such as relatively conservative structuring across our deals, relatively low leverage levels. These founder owner managed businesses that we deal with, they're inherently conservative. And so naturally, our capital structures tend to have a lot less leverage. And I think that is important, especially in times of economic uncertainty.
All right, Abhik, I appreciate all those perspectives. It's great to hear some of your expertise, no doubt. So we're going to take a pause on this conversation, but in the next couple of weeks, stay tuned for the second part of this episode, where we'll discuss the role technology plays with Abhik and Blair's strategies, which sectors are piquing their interest right now, and their predictions for the year ahead. So Abhik and Blair, I know you're coming back for part two, but thanks so much for the discussion today. I value my personal relationship with both of you, and certainly BDO greatly appreciates the broader relationship with both of your firms.
Thank you. Looking forward to continuing the discussion.
To our listeners, thanks so much for tuning in. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and leave a review of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, this has been BDO's Private Equity Perspectives.
The views presented by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of their respective firms.